I want to open with a short reading from an essay by Reverend David Grimm, who served this congregation for 10 years, beginning in 1994. For one of those years, I think it was 1998-99, Bob was our president. Still, Bob was our president, a leader. He and David worked closely together, and both of them liked and admired each other very much. That was the year that the Manhattan City Commission decided to move the Ten Commandments from a very out-of-the-way location in City Hall to a quite prominent one. Bob and David together guided the congregation's deliberation and vote to oppose displaying, to dispose of playing such religious materials anywhere on public property. Bob became one of the half dozen or so plaintiffs in the lawsuit, which ultimately led to giving the tablets to Manhattan Christian College for their display on Anderson Avenue. This is from David Grimm's essay, What is Destination? We are all ticket holders making the journey of a lifetime, making our way to one of an infinite number of ports. The amazing thing is that each of us writes our own ticket. With every investment of our time and energy, we are moving closer to our destination. Where are we headed? Look to your diary or Facebook postings, as well as your checkbook, and you'll find out just what destination you're writing on your ticket. Before we move to hearing more about Bob's journey of a lifetime, there are some housekeeping details to tend to, after which we will close these preliminaries with a reading by another of Bob's favorite ministers, Reverend Charles Stephen, Minister Emeritus of the Lincoln Unitarian Church, who's been preaching eloquently here since 1961. Following that reading, the Fellowship's pianist, Slavomir Dobrzynski, will perform a particularly lovely Chopin nocturne, and it's a nocturne in E-flat. Number 2, right? I hope I got there. Opus 9, number 2. Following that reading, after that we will open the floor to comments from friends and family. I think there aren't too many things to tend to, but, as we go through this, if it seems like something is being left out, let me know. This is from Charles Stevens' meditation. Some wishes for you. I chose it because its sentiments so closely mirror Bob's notion of a goodly life. I wish for you a troubled heart at times as woes of world and friend come close beside and keep you sleepless. I wish for you the thrill of knowing who you are and where you stand and why, especially why. Not prosperity, but dreams I wish for you. Not riches, but a sense of your own worth I wish for you. Not even long life, however proud we'd be to have it so, but a life that is crammed with living, hour by hour. And love I wish for you. May you give it frequently. And I wish for you solitude in the midst of company and a mind full of company within your quiet times. Full today's I wish for you, and full tomorrow's. Chopin. Thank you.
This is a reminiscence from Bob's Facebook friend in Great Britain, David Beeson. A friend to treasure, though we never met. Facebook does some things well. The best, in my experience, is that it can make friends of strangers, friends who haven't even met, who in the old sense of the word may never meet. That was our experience with Bob Patterson. It started with his posting occasional comments on my blog. They were always insightful or funny or both. And at one point, Danielle asked me, "Who is this Bob? He seems so clever and kind." So in November 2010, we sought him out on Facebook. That made us what I like to think of as friends, in the Facebook sense, with quotation marks. The cleverness and kindness continued. "He always brightens up the day, doesn't he?" Danielle would say, as the occasional comments sprinkled our posts. Gradually, they grew and blossomed into something more in more sustained exchanges, and almost imperceptibly, we moved from simple friends to proper friends. "You know," Danielle added, "he could be a brother of yours, with his sense of humor and his attitudes. We had so much in common, but he outdid me in gentleness and generosity of spirit." It did occur to us that only chatting on Facebook, while perfectly satisfactory as far as it went, would never beat actually meeting, physically, in the flesh. Danielle and I could travel to the States to catch up with him in Kansas. Then again, Bob seemed attracted to the idea of coming over to Europe so that we could all three travel down to Italy. Great plans to be revisited at some unspecified date in the future when we would all have more time. While we were waiting, the comments continued, never unpleasant, always warming. He'd crush a lousy pun of mine with a far worse one, or, even more gallingly, a more subtle one. Or he'd simply throw out some gentle wit or wisdom. On a photo of me trailing along 50 meters behind my dog, it was, "Dog walks man." Laconic, perfectly balanced, entirely inoffensive, deserving a smile. Back in December, replying to a post about the cough afflicting both Danielle and me, he wrote, "Man cough and women cough in your household. Get well." On New Year's Day, he posted a card which advised us to all kiss someone who thought we were wonderful. The last creature to kiss me who thought I was wonderful, Bob pointed out, had ears down to her knees and legs up to her wagging tail. Deprecating his own insomnia, just over a week ago, he posted, "Popsicle sticks are made from the wood of the white birch. Go back to bed." I enjoyed the whimsy of the thought, and as always with Bob, it left me smiling. Those smiles, those little brightening moments, are what we'll most remember of Bob. They'll be cheering memories, but sadly, memories are now all we're going to have. Because during the night of Saturday to Sunday, Bob, who we thought had been recovering from his long spate of ill health, succumbed to it and died. There'll be no more comments, and it's only now I realize how much I looked out for them. A like was always welcome, a reply still more so. The absence of a comment, frankly, disappointing. There'll be no meeting in Kansas. There'll be no trip to Italy. We waited for when we had time, and now time has run out. It was wonderful to have had 4 years of Bob's friendship, but I would have liked another 5 or 10 or 15. We would have both have liked to get to know him a great deal better and to do some of the things we'd planned. Which means brings me back to the beginning. Facebook does many things well, but it's only a vehicle, a medium. What brings it to life, what makes it shine, is people. When it comes to people, nobody did more than Bob to make Facebook shine with a gentle, warming, cheering light that did everyone who felt it good. Farewell, Bob. We're going to miss you and remember with pleasure the short time we shared.
This is a poem that Bob wrote on the occasion of the death of his brother. It's called Biopsy. You remembered that it wasn't like who's buried in Grant's tomb, but you joked that you couldn't recall the number of years in the Hundred Years' War. The dates for the War of the Roses, the square root of 2, pi beyond 3.14159 had also been removed, you claimed, for examination. You were upset that you couldn't immediately retrieve the fingering for your first formal piano piece, though that would return briefly. But you could remember your first baseball game and the joy on my face when you stopped the ball at second, and the grimace that melted to an impassive stare, the look a brother gives the public to disavow all relation when you threw the ball toward the loudest shout of, "Throw the ball!" into center field. A kinder disease would have removed that as well. Although these memories were soon even more irrelevant as your mind shielded itself, a cyst of will, knowing only that will was stronger than hope, that life is better than surrender, and then believing only in this breath and the next, and finally recalling a raindrop falling from a gutter past a window like a thought before sleep, an intolerably long sleep.
I'm sorry. I can do this. My name is Janet. I'm Bob's sister. I drove up with my aunt from Houston. And I first want to thank God for allowing all these friends and families to be here safely. I want to thank the church for all that you have done for my brother and for allowing him to come here throughout the years, throughout the many years. I want to thank my nephews. Y'all meant the world to Bob. And I think it probably showed through some of the things that you saw this morning. I want to apologize that my mom and my sister could not be here, but neither of them are very mobile at the moment. And they send their love and best wishes and their apologies for not being here, but they felt it was more important for Bob to be honored. I want to thank Michael for overseeing these proceedings and helping. I want to thank Jamie for helping put all of this together. I also want to thank all of the friends of Bob who have reached out to me through Facebook. I'm actually friends with David Beeson. He became friends with me when my father passed away. He was worried about Bob and contacted me. He actually helped me write the obituary. The first time I read his version, I read it with a British accent because it sounded so so British. Then I have a friend who was able to put a little bit of the Texas twang into it. So it's not, yeah. I also want to thank of his friends. I want to thank Ruth Welty. She's reached out with me to me, and I'm actually going to meet her on Friday in Houston. She's at a conference right now in Galveston, and she's gonna we're gonna meet in Houston Friday morning to share a meal and some coffee or something together, and I'll hopefully share some stories. I'm really looking forward to that. She said her daughter might be here, Ellen. I don't know if you're here, but I really appreciate everybody who's reached out. And now I want to introduce a poem that one of his friends sent to me in a private message. She told me that it's a poem that's actually been published. I don't know where. And this is only part of the poem. And it actually was commemorating Josh's 18th birthday along with all of his sons. So please bear with me while I try to read this. It talks about how proud he is of all of his sons, all three of them. But it's he never spoke ill of any of them. He loved them. He was so proud of them. I always heard wonderful things. I'm so sorry. I was able to print it out here. Let me see. It said, I don't know the name of it or anything, but it said, I don't object to tattoos or piercings on my friends, my colleagues, my students, or on other people's children. But 18 years ago, when all there was of him stretched only from my hand to the crook of my arm, I spent many hours watching him while he slept, his tiny diaper-clad butt in the air. And while I waited for him to wake up from his late afternoon nap, I would marvel at him, as I did at all my sons. In sunlight, his skin was golden and glowy. In shadow, strawberries and cream. In darkness, ivory. As he slept his infant sleep, I could believe only that he had been created from china or porcelain, not from flesh so imperfect as mine. Thank you.
Now is a time for people who would like to remember Bob, some special event or connection, whatever, and some instruction is necessary because, for one, it is important. Oh, I want to say this, that if you would like to come to the podium or pulpit, that would be fine to have that done. Otherwise, there will be a microphone circulating through the room, and there is some etiquette where it's concerned. It's unnatural, but you need to hold the thing like this. If you hold it like this, nothing happens. If you hold it like this, even less. But if you hold it like this and keep it there, just don't kiss it, but close to that. Because that will allow anybody with a headset to hear it, and it because the sound comes through the speakers, the people who ought to have headsets can hear it better. But perhaps most important, the service is being recorded, and it won't be recorded unless you hold the microphone like this. Enough of that. All right. Kathleen will, if you want to say something, come up here or wait for her.
Jim Chanteau. I knew Bob both back from the earlier days here at the Fellowship and in more recent years as a member of the every Tuesday afternoon wine and cheese group, of which we have, I don't know, a half dozen or more members here today. This was partly to drink wine and to eat cheese, but mostly to talk and to tell stories, and you could always rely on Bob for a funny quip or a funny story, and if you told a good one, he would come back and often top yours. So, but one particular series of events sort of struck me of how wine can be a social media of itself. For, I don't know, a series of months, Anne, who's sitting next to me, would bring a bottle of wine in a paper bag, and that would be the mystery wine. And we were supposed to guess what kind of wine it was. Now, you understand, this was not a professional wine-tasting group. We were just there to enjoy it. But so we would have this mystery wine, and we were supposed to write down what it was we thought the wine was. And I remember being right about half the time and wrong about half the time, sometimes terribly wrong. But what struck me is how often Bob's guess and my guess, whether right or wrong, were so similar. So in the end, we became wine buddies in both senses, right and wrong.
My name is Gretchen Lewis, and Bob was my colleague out at Barton. And I just have to tell you, gentlemen, you Bob's sons, that I appreciated, above all, Bob's kindness. He was a wonderful colleague, and we just enjoyed so much his kindness to us. Bob and I, okay, we were the old people out there, and we had a good deal in common, and we retired about the same time. And I always was going to call Bob and say, let's have a cup of coffee. And I didn't, and I'm sorry. But I will always remember one time, Bob was one of these people who told you, good job. And among colleagues, that's not as happen as often as it should. But one time, another political crisis in Manhattan was the Equal Rights Housing Ordinance. I remember I wrote a letter on behalf of my church, which is, First Congregational. And Bob took the time to actually write me an email telling me that I had done a good job, but also complimenting me on how well it was written, which I was made me feel good. But, you know, thank you for raising your father to be such a kind man. I appreciate it.
One of the things I really appreciate about Bob is he had the ability to, I'm Kathy Hedge. He had the ability to sort of very kindly set the bar high for you. So if you were going to do something with him, you always tried, I always tried a little bit harder, practiced a little bit more. It was about 6 months ago, I think, that Bob and I shared a service with Charles Stevens, who came here to present, and we read poetry together. He would read one, I read the next, and he'd read the next one. I'll tell you, I really practiced my readings before I came in, but it wasn't because Bob put any pressure or said anything negative. I just knew that he was going to do such a wonderful job that I needed to step up my game too. We were hoping to do a service together on Sarah Teasdale, a beautiful poet, and he had volunteered to be my reader and to read poems with me for that service. And now he won't be here, but I'm going to imagine that he's standing right next to me, so I know I'll prepare a little bit better for that one. Thank you, Bob.
I'm not sure when exactly I met Bob. I think my name's Dolly Gutter, and I live near where the Patterson family mostly used to live, and Jamie still does. And I met Jamie through Bluemont School, and our kids grew up together. And at some point, I met Bob a little bit later, and Jamie introduced me, and she said, "This is our runner." And I thought, what does that mean? And then I've thought about that over the years because I never really asked, but I realized that I ran by their house all the time and maybe I had become their runner in some way. But there's a reason I ran by their house. It was almost always decorated. For every season, it was decorated, and it was like the house in our neighborhood to go by. And Halloween was the epitome of decoration. You had to go by their house every day because it didn't just start decorated. It grew in decoration as you got closer to the holiday. So I just appreciate the family. I always felt it was just a really important part of our neighborhood and a really good family.
Well, while you're gathering your thoughts, I thought about what Bob would say about my being the convener today instead of a minister. Might have used something like bait and switch for the job. Are there other comments? I know every single person in this room remembers something or other about Bob. And okay.
This is just a little fragment of a thought about Bob. I think it was 2 days after he died, I was filing something, and a scrap of paper randomly fell out of the file folder that was misfiled. I picked it up and read it, and it was some notes that I had made on a sermon that Bob had given I don't know, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, and it was on the subject of spirituality, and it had just struck me what he said about it, so I made a few notes, and Bob said that the two most important aspects of spirituality were, number one, the apprehension of beauty, he called it, and by which he meant the perceiving and appreciation of beautiful things. And the second was to be open to coincidences or unexpected things or small, strange occurrences. And, I don't know, it just struck me, and I made a note about it.
Well, I got to know, I'm Rebecca Stark.
Closer.
And thanks, Benjamin. This is my son, Benjamin, who's a friend of Taylor's.
He's giving you good advice.
Is it? It's not? Okay. I'm also hard of hearing, so I can't tell. So anyway, I got to know Bob through the children and through Lamont School, and I agree that he was a very kind man. And he always had good things to say about his children, just like you said, Janet.
Well, I'm going to tell a story. I'm Kathleen Oldfather, and I'm teaching RE, religious education, for the first time this year, and we're going through these picture books. You read a book, and then you talk about it. So one book, we're supposed to invite an older person to the room to read. So I thought, well, Bob, maybe get Bob to come and read. So for the first time, I thought, we'll have him sit in a chair, a big chair, so he doesn't have to get down on the floor and read, because I thought that'd be uncomfortable and awkward. And so we put the kids in a little circle of chairs. And so Bob sat down, and these kids were on the chair, under the chair, over the chair. He and I just lost total control of this classroom with these kids. But we just grinned, and he tried to read the book, and the kids were... Anyway, got all done, and we just laughed. And a little boy came up to him that he had never met or seen, and he gave Bob a great big hug on the way out. And Bob referred to it later as the gift of a spontaneous hug, unsolicited spontaneous hug, or something like that. And it really it was touching for both of us, and kids enjoyed him.
Ann Marchant, I think this is going to sound really sad, but I found out this morning I had no idea he was such a photographer as an artist, attempted artist myself. Just beautiful photography, and I appreciate the presentation, I guess, that Doug did. And, as Jim was saying at the Wine and Cheese, Marilyn Caldwell and Steve Mull started this years ago. When they left town, I took over as the Wine and Cheese hostess, and that's where I really got to know Bob and his humor, and I'm just thinking, I need this to go on. I just hate to think of all the humor that I'm going to miss because he's no longer with us. So,
I just was glad that Bob was able to spend Christmas Day at my house this past year after he had spent Christmas Eve with his three sons. So I'm glad he was able to come and join us.
Enel Forrester, in the mention of the Ten Commandments tablet battle, Bob being president of our congregation at that time, and of course he and Byrne did a lot of background battling in the trenches, so to speak, and of course trying to help Karen McCullough, who was being attacked by the community at the time. It was quite a serious thing, really. And with Bob's help, we were able to calm the waters in many ways. And, of course, Karen has been able to continue, and people have either forgotten or forgiven her for her stance, her very strong stance on that situation. But it was something that I think Bob and Bern had a lot of fun, camaraderie, working on that.
If we may, we'll close. Slavomir is going to play the third movement of Mozart's Sonata in C Major, and then I have a brief benediction of sorts. Then you're encouraged to stay for some refreshments. We had a big party here last night, and there's a lot of it left over, and nobody wants to take it home except ingested or digested. And then Slavomir, then I'll have closing words. Thank you. when Slavomir and I were discussing the music for this morning, and I gave him some broad outlines, he said, "Oh, good, nothing funereal. I think we hit the mark." Bob was a great admirer of the Reverend Ronald Knapp, Emeritus Minister of First Unitarian Church in Omaha. Ron had been giving sermons here and leading workshops for a wide variety of subjects for over 20 years. This one comes from Ron's sermon, Connecting the Prose and the Passion, the text for which is a passage from E.M. Forster's novel, Howard's End. "Only connect the prose and the passion," Forster writes, "and both will be exalted and human love will be seen at its height. Live in fragments no longer. Only connect. And the beast and the monk, robbed of isolation that is life to either, will die." In support of Forster's proposition, Ron presents insights from Rollo May, Plato, Ralph Waldo Emerson, William Butler Yeats, Abraham Lincoln, and others. "If you wish to know," Ron said, "about one of the country's most spectacular geologic sites, skip the encyclopedia and go directly to Ferdy-Groffet's Grand Canyon Suite." Philosopher William James provides Ron's conclusion. "The union of the mathematician with the poet, fervor with measure, passion with connectedness, this surely is the ideal." So be it.